Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Writing on Whidbey Island, also known as WOWIE, and located at writingonwhidbeyisland.com. Our podcast is about all things writing as it relates to Whidbey Island. My name is Don, and today I'm joined by some individuals. I'm not going to tell you who they are yet. And our topic for today is also something we're going to get to, but I will tell you this. First, I want to tell you a few updates about what's going on with Writing on Whidbey Island, since if you've been listening to the show, you know that we're doing a little bit of a summer hiatus. And then we have a discussion topic with some new co-hosts. And it's a hot topic right now within writing, so I am looking forward to this. And looking forward to talking with the people that we are each here to talk with. Anyway, if you've listened to the last episode, you know that Tom moved on in April from WOWIE after almost 4 years with doing the show. And he did that only because of his day job, which is cool. But it's unfortunate, and Tom will be missed. I'm still in touch with Tom, of course, but enjoyed doing the show with him. This also comes at my own personal busy season. I do work off the island as a scuba diver. And when he told me, it was right at the beginning of the busy season. So the first thing I knew was, okay, it's great to take over the show, but it's going to have to wait more or less until about September, plus or minus. But in the meantime, then I get to make a few changes to the show that Tom and I talked about, but never really had time to do so. Anyway, getting to those, one of the things that I'm reading notes here. I have a number of duplications. Let's just say I'm updating the website. I would like to try and move the podcast to a host. Anchor's one of the ones that I'm looking into. There's several different things. But one of the things, and I'll skip the list today because I also really want to talk about this other topic. One of the things that's happened here is when Tom told me that he was going to hand the show over to me, and at that point it was my choice to do whatever was going to happen with the show. One of the things I said was, you know, I'm pretty busy too, and maybe I should just call it good at the same time as Tom. And I said, no, I think this is, it's enough of a thing that's gone on that Writing on Whidbey Island should continue, or at least I should give it a try. So in trying to figure out how the show must go on, as the saying goes, I said, well, you know, I'm not going to do this alone. I want to work with at least one other person. Maybe I work with several people. In fact, that could be good, because if I have several people around the island and then we're doing an interview, then I can just go get together with that guest that's closest to that host. So that would bring variety to the show. Maybe it's the saying, many hands make light work. You know, let's see how that goes. And what I did from there was I looked at the past guests. And I said, you know, there's some people that really stood out in my mind as fantastic guests. I wonder if they might be interested at all. And I made up my list. And before I could even start contacting people, one of those people online turned around and said, hey, if you want some help with the show, I'd be happy to be involved. Like, wow, that's great. And that's kind of what happened with this list. And really to say the people that I was most hoping out of this list would be interested in the show. And mind you, I mean this heart in my hands. Please, please, please. I hope they're interested in the show. Like back in junior high, right? They're the ones that came around and said, yeah. So this to me is already going in a great direction, and I'm excited to see where this goes. To that end, I will make the introduction and really to say, if you don't read the website, this will be a surprise. If you do read the blog posts, then you know what's going on. But here's the thing. In order of episodes, these guests that are becoming hosts with the show, first, episode 12, author of Confessions of a Pentecostal Buddhist, Boys, and Waxing the Dents, is poet Daniel Edward Moore, and Daniel will be joining us as the show resumes in September. Next was episode 37, Sarah McCarthy Allen, who is the author, her podcast was Mixing Fantasy and Physics, because she writes in both genres. And then episode 41, Laughing Into Her Lapel, which remains probably the hardest time I ever laughed doing an episode, and that might happen a little bit more now. Anyway, Laughing Into Her Lapel is Lauren Flake. And today, Sarah and Lauren are here. And as we're going into the next chapter of Writing on Whidbey Island, Sarah, Lauren, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent. So I said that we had an interesting hot topic in writing that's going on right now. And as I was communicating with the two of you, this kind of came up and we said, well, how about we do an interim podcast, let people know what's going on and talk about this topic. And ultimately what it has to do with is AI used in write. Yeah. And this should be interesting because when you get down to it, out of the three of us, we each have three different positions. And I think we probably even, Sarah, I think you're most familiar with it. So in a moment, I'd love if you give us a better edification here. Yeah. So the thing is we each have three different positions between four on the fence and against. And I think this will be an interesting conversation. I think it will be good as long as there's no fist fights, because I'm pretty sure Lauren can take both of us. She'd probably rip off one of my arms and beat both of us. So, good thing you're not wearing a jacket.
I can put my jacket on.
Go for it if you like. Anyway, so we don't have a decision yet, but we also bandied around a few names, and one of them getting kind of geeky was AI okay? Or AI okay V, which in math, of course, means
or
AI okay or AI oh no. Which almost looks like it comes off the molecular table. Anyway.
It's a relatable and enjoyable title.
Right. So that in mind, I know that so what I'm hearing is that there are people that are taking the different text AI software. I'll go from here, and then if you'll explain better what we're talking about. There's people that are taking software that will produce text where they basically give it an idea. Like I was talking with a friend the other day and I said, I want a murder mystery that has to do with a baseball team, right? I was pulling a few things out of the air. And you tell the computer this and 5, 15, whatever minutes later, if you tell it, give me 30,000 words, whatever, it will produce this story. And what apparently is going on is people are taking that story that the software created, putting their own name on it and publishing it and saying, I wrote this, right? So that's where this hot topic, at least as far as I understand it from my perspective within the writing community, where that's at. So how accurate is that? Is that the software? Because I know there's also graphics that people are doing.
Yeah, well, there's different ones. There's ChatGPT, which is the big one, mm-hmm. which you basically type in a prompt and it gives you information and you can do a wide variety of things with it. Then ChatGPT has like an API that, you know, it has like...
API.
Yeah, what is an API?
You said that and suddenly there's like two deer in headlight.
Remember how I said that I always got lost in math because they would say a word?
Right,
yeah,
yes.
That was it.
Jargon, yeah. yep, my apologies.
Jargon.
Great, yep. Never mind. Some people use ChatGPT to make a new program, basically.
Okay.
So there's one called Sudo, right? So you can use it for a bunch of different things. So, yeah, I think that that's definitely a concern of people just, like, typing in a prompt and then having it make a story from that. It's, mm-hmm. it's not good enough to make a long thing that has narrative, like, that makes sense, like a narrative structure that makes sense. It can do like a couple of paragraphs, but I think the main thing that I use AI for, or that I see people using AI for, is like brainstorming. Mm-hmm. So I, for example, was trying to come up with a name for, I forget, like a character, a name for a character. And I was like, I want this character to have a whimsical name. I'd like it to be three syllables. I would like it to kind of rhyme and have interesting sounds. And I want it to be kind of funny. And mm-hmm. I realized I couldn't just tell ChatGPT, like, I would like you to come up with a funny name. Because I have to be like, what specifically do I want that name
right.
to be? And then it came up with this list of, like, 10 names that sort of were really hilarious and really mm-hmm. whimsical and sort of sounds. So I think I typically don't use it for, like, creation because the stuff that it makes doesn't really make sense. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe it will get there. You know, it will get there to where it makes sense. I'm sure it will, which is scary. But also, yeah, and that's... And I also, like, don't feel like I have a really, like... strong, like, position on mm-hmm. it. You know, I more so feel like I'm in a gray area of, like, I feel like I have two options, either to be terrified about what this tool is going to do in the future or to, like, embrace it and play around with it. So, like, in order to not be terrified of it, I'm trying to, like, play with it and learn from it and sort of see what it can be used for.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's ChatGPT that does the text. And then there's PseudoWrite, which is like, it sort of makes a structured version of the text. So it helps you with brainstorming. It's like, do you want a bunch of, do you want plot points? Do you want like, one thing it will do is like, you can put in the draft that you have so far and be like, please continue. And we'll try to match your style and then continue from there, which is kind of interesting. I tried mm-hmm. it out. It's not very good. It's just kind of. The thing that I've noticed about all AI is that it sort of is making, like, the average of what humanity has already created. So, like, when you use one of the art generation things and you, like, give it a prompt, it basically makes, like, an average of all the, like, kind of art that's in that style.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful sometimes, but it can also just be, like, really bland. So one thing that I have been trying to use it for in fantasy novels is like I explain like the plot that has happened so far and I say like, what do you think would happen next? And then whatever it says, I know that that's kind of like the average thing that mm-hmm. probably would happen. And then I can like do that or I can not do that. I think it's better at like analyzing text and giving feedback on it than it is at actually like creating books. I really worry about the plagiarism aspect, and I like really care about what artists are saying about losing their livelihoods and like having their work
taken.
Yeah,
horrible and really valid. And so I hope we figure out something to do about that.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like there's a lot of ethical concerns there.
See, this is interesting already. Personally, just because I've been more or less on the fence, and some of this is because I only know so much about what's going on, and then I know sci-fi, right?
I've seen The Matrix. I know what it's
right,
like.
Yeah. Flynn lives, okay? So the thing that I've looked at, because my understanding is, like what I just said, you know, I want a baseball team murder mystery. Okay, I've understood that it can write the whole book. What you're saying is, no, not yet, not really, which is encouraging at the moment because I'm of that group that says, no, the authors need to do at least a certain amount of their own work, and that's part of my on-the-fence position. And maybe I'm finding already that I'm more for this just because I've looked at it. The main thing that I've gone to say is... one, if I were to use the graphics software to say I want a character that is like this, I might make graphics of the characters that I have so I can put them up on the wall to further visualize what I'm doing while I'm writing.
Yeah.
I don't see a problem with that. It just saves time over going through a bunch of magazines with scissors. Okay. We did that in school. Okay. I mean, that to me is totally cool. Right. Where I've been on the fence, and maybe this is actually what this is, and maybe I'm more for this than I was aware, which, okay, wow. I've looked at it and said, okay, I want to, you know, if I tell the software, make me an outline of this story concept roughly that I have. Let's put it that way. For what you're saying is more or less it could turn around and say, okay, here's your 10 primary bullet points that take you from the introduction to the arc to the resolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I could sit down and go, okay, it's suggesting this. Maybe I want to change D and then feed it back to the thing or write on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
If that more or less was parallel to my idea.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, aside from the fact that I'm there's pantsers, there's planners, and then mm-hmm. the lesser known feral writers. Hi. I kind of plan, I kind of just write, but you know, I do both. So, but where I'm writing right now is, as you're both well aware, is, I mean, I'm writing music history and I'm doing recipes and food trivia. Okay. I have, I'm not going to goof it up and give the whole idea this time. The one time I made a major edit to one of these podcasts was when I rattled off the whole story idea. And that was with you, Lauren.
Yes. Sure was.
And we got, I'm rattling this off and feeling good about it and then go, oh.
Maybe I shouldn't have done that.
So that's about the only edit that I've ever really made to these podcasts. anyway, I have, let's just put it this way. I have a post-apocalyptic series.
Mm-hmm.
Right now in my mind, in my notes, it's about 9 books. And then I have, let's just call it a thriller, mystery thriller series. Jack Reacher, eat your heart out. You know? That's, you know, I have those and I do have this fiction stuff. And of course, like all authors, I've got that, you know, oh, I'm going to write a play for stage that's with vampires, you know, whatever stupid stuff. I mean, it's all good for the creative process, right? But somewhere in there, I mean, you're both writing fiction,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm writing nonfiction. And even though I have written a little bit of fiction kind of more for myself or these notes or whatever, something now about being in the scene, the idea of writing fiction, getting serious and taking that to people and going public just kind of terrifies me. And I want to make sure that it's at least good enough. Right. So
yeah.
That's some of where I look at it and say, okay, let's take the post-apocalyptic thing and, you know, let's talk to the computer and get all the more sci-fi and maybe have it help me or find a co-author.
Yeah.
I think the reaction that I've been seeing within the writing community online and
mm-hmm.
everything is whenever AI is introduced as something that has helped, whether this be the art or on the book, on the cover of the book, or with like within the actual story itself, it very quickly gets shunned.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are not wanting to have anything to do with AI within the writing community. And a lot of it is also, like what you were saying, right now, it can't write a full-length novel. Like, it can't handle that. It's not going to be able to do everything that a human could creatively, right? But it's learning and learning quickly. So give it a handful of years.
Right.
You know, and it will be able to do that. So that is the biggest concern right now. And like what you said with livelihood and stuff like that, anybody who is an author and that is their livelihood, or they want that to be their livelihood, is now
right.
incredibly threatened.
Right.
Yeah.
Artists are incredibly threatened. I know recently there was the sci-fi fantasy self-published contest that Mark Lawrence puts on every year. It's really, really
no.
cool. It's yeah. Oh my goodness. You should look into it. It's really cool. It's all, it's like I said, sci-fi fantasy. And
you had me at sci-fi.
I know you.
I'm easy. If it's sci-fi, I'm easy.
But he puts on like this contest where you're able to enter your self-published
okay.
Story. And he has different judges come in. They read each of the books and, you know, mark them according to their grading scale, quote unquote. And whoever wins, like, it's a huge honor. It's to the point now that usually whoever wins gets picked up by, like, a traditional publisher, like big name traditional publisher. It's
okay.
really, really cool. You should look into it.
Okay.
Anyway, they had a contest this year voting on best cover art as well. So for the illustrators who had participated with these books, right? Well, the one that ended up winning, turns out, portions of it now, the percentage of that portion, I don't know. Could it be 1%? Could it be 99%? I don't know. But a portion of that cover art had been done by AI. And so they ended up disqualifying that and giving the winning to the one who came in second place instead.
Okay.
And then, but because of that, they ended up saying, you know what, never mind, we're not going to do any art stuff anymore.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I can't remember which.
Yeah, I remember that one year I won. Really? Yeah, it was the one year they did it.
The one year they did it. But because AI had been brought into it, it brought up such an issue. Mm-hmm. Like, people were so angry over the fact that AI had basically won this contest, right? Over a living human being. And then there was a couple of authors, and I can't remember who they were now, but I saw on Twitter they had hired this artist to do their cover art for their book that they were mm-hmm. co-writing together. And the artist had also implemented AI art with it. And they ended up turning around and suing the artist because they paid him for him to do the art, not for the AI to do the art. Because if they want AI to do it, they can just hop on and do it themselves.
Sure.
They don't have to pay you for that. And so they, yeah.
It's, I was given that suggestion lately.
To do AI art?
Yeah.
Well, I know some publishing houses are actually doing that, which means that people are already losing their jobs. Artists are already losing
right.
their jobs.
Right. Yeah. Know? See, I updated the cover and also republished my first book through Lulu because I could get color on the inside of my recipe book at an affordable price because nobody wants to look at black and white food. It's apparently not appetizing.
I can't imagine.
But I also...
It's just an old time.
Yeah. I mean, Betty Crocker didn't even have black and white pictures in there, right? So... I also wanted a cover that I knew that was going to be more commercially effective.
Yeah.
And I've got a new cover at this point. I'm very happy with it. One of the things he said was, maybe you could make new cover art using graphic AI. I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that. And it just, and I think some of it for me was, and maybe it's more that artist sort of thing that I created this. This is personal. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, my recipes are very personal. I don't publish a recipe unless I've made it, it's effective, I can write it in such a way that I think most people can do it, and I think it's really good. I'm not going to release a recipe that, you know, it's okay. You won't starve, right? No, I want it to be something that most people can make and most people can turn around and go, you know, I like this. I'm pretty happy with myself. So for me, too, that ends up conveying, you know, I want that to be on every page, mm-hmm. including the cover with the book. And the idea of having, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator make the cover, you know, no, mm-hmm. you know, not interested. That it just, that didn't seem right.
Humanity, that authenticity.
Right. That analog, you know. But, I mean, hey, I would be just fine, say, going to that graphic art AI and saying, essentially, what would you recommend as this type of cover? I mean, I don't think you can ask it that way. You know, this isn't the computer on the Enterprise yet. You can't have dialogue type question, you know, queries. But, you know, if I were to get some recommendations and then if I were to choose and say, I want a concept like this and then take it to a real person, that I could see saying, I have this kind of character in my book. Can you generate a picture so I can put that on the wall and I can think about it? Is that going to go in the book? Probably not.
Yeah, no, I agree. I have no problem with it being used for like concept, right? So if I have a character who has like some kind of unique something about them, right? And I need to be reminded of that. So I have this picture of them. So whenever I look at it, okay, I remember. Okay, I can type this out, right? No problem with that. But when it comes to actually getting your book out there, and if you're wanting to have pictures in your book,
right?
I think personally, I think it'd be better just to, you know, support a smaller artist to actually then go and like do the art for real, a quote unquote official art for
right.
the book,
you right?
know? But as far as like your concept art to then like take even to an artist, because I mean, like if you go get like a tattoo done, right? You can draw out whatever you want, and it could be, you know, great or terrible, depending on your skill. But you take that to the artist and you show it to them, and then they capitalize on that, right? They take it and they make it into whatever piece that they do, you know.
Which you could also, or at least I can, you could also say how much is that person then influenced by the computer as opposed to working off their own creativity.
Sure.
Right? I mean, yeah. There was one person that I think it was on, let's just say it was on Twitter, pretty sure it was, just a couple of weeks ago, they're just like, oh yeah, I've got these characters for my, you know, military sci-fi, whatever it was. And they had, you know, they had all these cool looking characters, human characters on this other planet, mm-hmm. geared up, all this stuff ready to go. All of them had six fingers on each hand. They were badass, man. But I couldn't stop looking at the six fingers. I was like, okay, so what's going on in the future here? Have they like gotten mutated on a different planet? Were they engineered to be military sci-fi people, you know? And like everybody commenting on it, they basically said these characters look really great. Six fingers.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, that is one like tell sign like right there if it's AI is look at the hands.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They cannot do hands. No. I'm seeing three fingers, four fingers, six fingers.
Sometimes so it's like three legs and one of them sort of blends into the other.
Yeah. It's like a...
I saw that.
It's kind of weird. Yeah.
Okay.
It has trouble with that. So that's always one way to
so,
tell.
And like there's this one book cover that keeps on coming up because, you know, what's the numbers that help Facebook send stuff to you? The math.
Algorithm?
Thank you.
I knew it worked.
I couldn't get... I was coming up with all these other A words. Anyway, thank you. So there's this one that I keep on seeing that's actually some other military sci-fi. This thing's already published. Where I'm talking about the idea of generating the characters so I can work with them, you know, yeah, if I were to then go to the artist and say, yeah, I'm looking to put in frames in my book that shows the, you know, here's Bob, whatever, right? If I show them that picture, then they're going to be a certain amount influenced by that AI. Mm-hmm. If I go to the artist and say, I'm thinking of redhead gal, military science fiction. She's got this like really terse look with her eyes and she kicks butt. Okay. How much is that artist then, mm-hmm. you know, and, It's that, you know, question into the mirror sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, one thing that I noticed, because I work with an illustrator for some of my projects. I've been making these story-based physics worksheets where it's like a physics worksheet, but it's like part of a fantasy story.
Oh, that's really cool.
It's really fun. And I hired this illustrator, and she's so amazing. And she came up with these like amazing ideas. She put the equations like on this fantasy scroll at the top. And,
oh,
like,
that's awesome.
And then like I made like a couple of them. And so then the second worksheet I made, she incorporated like a cameo of the characters from the first one. I was like, that's an amazing. It is now a physics worksheet cinematic universe. I'm so excited.
I'm so into this.
And I was like, should we get a theme song for this? Record music?
I can do the bagpipe part.
Oh my God, yes, that's what they need.
I'm out in my car right now.
Oh, yes, really epic bagpipes. Perfect. That one's amazing. I love that. Anyway, so I've had her do these projects, but I've also been playing around with AI a lot because I make like choose your own adventure stories that are like physics and math related. I've been trying to put them on my website. And I was like, well, maybe I can like generate the AI art.
How so, big of a You Are an Awesome Geek Blue Ribbon Award do you get? Wow.
Blowing me out of the water here.
You have to you read the page, then you have to solve this equation or that equation, and if you get it right, then you go to the next page or you find the wrong one and it doesn't make sense.
Right, yeah.
Whew.
So
I'm not
far,
that mathy.
Not an audience. It's like the people who like math are like, why is this all a story? And the people who like the stories are like, I don't want to, you're making me solve equations to get the rest of this. It's just traumatizing for both.
Oh, you do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's not fun.
If you get the
problem, no one likes them.
If you get the problem wrong, is it a permadeath solution there?
No.
Step one, dead.
Why do I keep on going to the end of the book and it says the end?
That's what I realized I needed to change. I needed to, like, make it so that you can loop around. The first one I made it, you couldn't do loops with the software I was using, so I just had to have a bunch of deaths. But it's so not fun, because you just try one thing and the librarian kills you. And then you do another thing with a bunch of deaths, because it was really hard. I already made a bunch, so you just, like, the librarian just murders you.
Wow.
This librarian is really violent.
Because I was like, this isn't hard. I've been working on it. Like, okay,
at least people will stop talking in the damn library, right? Give me your lapel.
Even the library is unnaturally quiet.
Wow.
So I was trying to make, like, illustrations, and, like, it's so fun playing around with the illustrations, because they make these, like, beautiful, weird, dream-like things. So I was like, what would a jellyfish pirate be? What would a marshmallow pirate be? It's so delightful.
A jellyfish pirate?
I don't need the graphics. I can just, like, start to get lost just in that thought.
Yeah, I know. Oh, my gosh. It was so cool.
Does it have an eye patch?
It should have, but it didn't. It was like,
I'm disappointed.
That's where you hire the artist to add it, yeah, and then right. You sue them because something.
Like, so a couple things. So one, I was trying to do, I was like, you know what would be cool is if I made like a grimoire of numbers, which is like a witch's book of like different mythological beasts and stuff. So I was like, maybe the AI can make like a number, but that's also a dragon. The AI does not know what numbers are. It was like, is this a number? And I was like, that is just a squiggle. Some of it was like, oh, it looks sort of like a 5, but like it couldn't really make.
Yes,
like,
it's a number in Elvish.
Right. If I was like, make a 7, but try to also make it into a dragon. Like, it can't do that. So it can't do like real. But the other thing that I was noticing.
So you're telling me real quick that I can't use AI to cheat on like a math test.
Not yet. Just incorporated ChatGPT with Wolfram Alpha, so it might be a little better than it was.
Really, what she's asking there is, when can she use AI to file her taxes and get the most strategic cheating results with her taxes?
Or just simply.
And when she's done with it, may I use it?
Right now, AI is hilariously incorrect. Hilarious and so confident. I saw somebody online describe it as mansplaining as a service.
Oh my god.
Because it will be very confident and just like 100% wrong. Or it'll say stuff and it like sort of makes sense, and then it just like it's still confident, but like it's just gibberish. I think that was a month and a half ago that I was doing that, and I think they recently incorporated it with like math stuff. Mm-hmm. So it might be a little bit better now. I'm sure it's
I do need that to catch up, because like my job and everything, a lot of carpentry, and I don't know what like half of like 3 7/8 is. I don't know that, and I need ChatGPT to just tell me.
It can probably do that.
Half of that is this.
It can probably do that, but it might be like just wrong sometimes. But it would be very confident and really hard to. It'll also just make up facts about people too.
Well, people already do that.
It's a major problem.
So it's like Wikipedia. You know, it could be right, could be wrong. We don't know.
Right, but it feels
check your sources.
Like
but it feels like it's right.
Yeah. Wow.
But back to the art thing. So I was trying to make images for this like game that I was making. But what I found was like, so I used to go on Shutterstock and buy images that other people had made, and then I kind of stopped doing that. I was playing, but then I found I'm going back to it because what's in Shutterstock is like there are these images that have like heart in them. There's like story. There's a connection with a real person, and that's just not there. The AI makes this technically beautiful, dreamlike, really interesting, gorgeous thing, but it's like there's not. It can't be like a. It's not a story.
Yeah.
And I find that they're beautiful and fun to play around with, but like they lack that soul of that person. And I feel like the writing probably does well too. Because I kind of feel like one thing I've noticed when I write a story and that somebody else reads it is whatever I was feeling while I was writing it, they tend to have that same reaction while they're reading it. And I get that same feedback. And like, the thing about AI writing is that it's just really bland. It's like, I find that what it's good for is like marketing copy, because that's like a specific like voice and stuff. Anyway, the images are like, I'm going like, one, there's nothing that will ever replace this amazing collaboration with this amazing artist who's doing physics worksheets and like her ideas, and she has like a real vision for it. So Yeah, I think from those experiences, I'm a little bit less, you know, worried about replacing people, but I don't know. Yeah.
See, and one of the questions, and, you know, again, nothing new. I mean, just go into the writing community online and bring up the topic. I'm sure, I mean, I haven't exactly done it, I think, as much as you have, Lauren, to see where people just shun this. but one of the questions is, okay, whether it's that artwork or even, you know, to, I guess somebody could even argue this too, is that if you had that software create your outline, okay, who owns part of that creative intellectual property, right? we have the building all to ourselves now.
Libraries are naturally quiet.
This could be the beginning of that horror story.
This is the beginning of the horror
Escape
story.
Escape from the library.
It's just like the Blair Witch Project. Yeah. This where it's like muffled sounds and screams.
Did I hear a DVD drop over on the aisle? at least we got a microwave and I've got a couple of Cliff Bars. We'll survive. So
I got this, Lauren.
The thing, though, is, okay, you know, if there's the company that creates the software, and then you create something using the software, which on one hand, you could say, okay, well, Microsoft gives you Word. And you, heck, my notes right here, I used Word. Does Microsoft own any part of this if I get paid for it? Right? I don't know. I'm the one that worked out all of this, but if I tell software, create me, you know, a picture that looks like somebody painted while watching Bob Ross on acid, right? I say that because I saw a painting earlier today that made me think of that.
So it is very specific.
You know, how much does that company then own the art that created because you prompted it, but it made the art, then you put it, say, into your book or your cover or whatever. You know, similar to this is in what countries does this get looked at different ways?
Yeah.
Right? So, and one of the things that I'm still working on is making my main gig, if you want to use a hip word, accurate. What I'm trying to do as my main job is becoming an audiobook narrator. Well, in my process of researching this and finding out different things, one thing that came up, I think on Joanna Penn's podcast, was that, say, you take your book, we're, of course, in the U.S., and you want it translated into German. Okay, if you find someone in the U.S. that translates it into German and finishes the product and says, here you go, and you pay them for their services, you own that end product per U.S. copyright law. Now, if you contact someone in Germany who speaks English and can translate your book that's in English into German, they own 50% copy. I believe it's 50% copyright on that text if you publish it. Right. Right. So, okay, that only makes things more confusing, right? So is it going to be that in the U.S. you create this picture using AI and you put it in your book and you own it, and that company just gets the software license fee, you know, whatever, or in Germany or somewhere else, are they going to turn around and say, oh, well, this is an AI-generated picture, and you owe Microsoft or whoever, Valve, whatever, you owe them a royalty?
Yeah, that is one thing. Actually, I was talking to my dad about a couple weeks ago, is, you know, people who are making art with AI, right now it's really cool and it's all free, right? But if you were to take that art and then turn around and sell it, right, does it really belong to you? Because, like, an artist will sit down with, you know, programs that they've purchased, you know, or if they're doing it digitally, or with actual canvas and paint that they've purchased, they own that.
Sure.
And they do the labor. Like, they actually do the work to create that art.
Right.
So, therefore, they own it until somebody purchases it from them, right? But if you do it with AI, you didn't do the labor. You didn't create the art. Somebody else did. You commissioned the AI.
Right.
And then you didn't pay for it. So who owns it? Right? So
right.
I am just waiting for that to go into court, because that's where it's headed.
Well, and all of it too. And I mean, one of the things is that really to say, we're only beginning to see this for what it is. This is, it's an emerging technology. Yeah. This is not, you know, it's at this point and this is the end all. Mm-hmm. No, this is, you know, this is when I was talking about this topic with Tom about moving over the website. Mm-hmm. He didn't say it in so many words, but I think he was kind of jealous that he wasn't going to get to talk on this topic. Mm-hmm. As he put it, you know, this is the second airplane into the World Trade buildings. You know, the first airplane, ooh, it's an accident. The second one, wait a minute, something's going on here. Okay. And right, this is still continuing to show up as what this is. Mm-hmm. Right, it's a grim example, but so you know, I think some of where people are turning around and putting their hands up is they're thinking that this is where this is at, and it's only going to change a little. No, this mm-hmm. is probably going to change a lot, even to where, you know, we're looking at it now, and you know, give it another 5, 10, 50 years, whatever, we're going to look at it and go, remember when we thought about it that way? And, you know, we were scared, or we were right to be scared, or, you know, we were wrong, or whatever. You know, this also makes me think of going for an older example, the term Luddite. People like to think that it means fear of technology. Ludd, I forget the rest of the fellow's name. He had a clothing, if I remember this right too, he had a clothing manufacturing company, and his people would sit at tables and hand sew these clothes, right? Like the shirt that I'm wearing, this mm-hmm. would take a week to make, whereas, okay, you can make it within a day, cutting it out and using a sewing machine. He wasn't actually fearful of the sewing machine technology. He was fearful of how it would change the industry.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the same model as what we're talking about. But even then, to go toward a somewhat more recent time, I believe it was Snow White. When Snow White, you know, the first feature length cartoon came out, it wasn't eligible for an award within, you know, Oscars, who have you, mm-hmm. because, well, it doesn't have people in it.
Right.
Right. And it didn't get an award for like 15 years or something. And it was a retroactive award. But now it's its own genre mm-hmm. genre and subgenres within the same movie award.
Yeah, it's massive, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, obviously things are going to change. There's no stopping that at this point. This ship has sailed. You know, things are going to be changing. But right. It's just interesting, you know, where will law, we're going to call it law, where will it stop? Mm-hmm. things and catch things up and put boundaries and barriers up. And right now it's the Wild West, you know. I mean, literally there's I can't remember which magazine it is. One of the ladies at my writing group, by the way, I found a writing group, guys.
Yay. That's cool.
One of the ladies at my writing group was telling me about this, and she was saying that there's this short story publishing magazine up in Canada, and it's relatively large. Where they, you know, take in submissions and things like that.
Yeah, Canada's big.
And they'll publish it in their magazine and everything. But they've had to completely shut down all submissions because they are being flooded
right.
by people trying to, quote unquote, make a quick buck by writing short stories with AI and sending it in. And it's just completely overwhelmed their whole system. And they can't fast enough go through and separate what is AI and what's actual.
Right.
You know, and so we're already seeing it impacting and, for dramatic effect, ruining a lot of industry stuff. You know, so
right.
so yes, it's quite literally acting like the Wild West, where there is no rules, there is no boundaries, there are no laws. And that very, very quickly can make things very bad, you know. Yeah.
And see, that flooding thing, that's also, you two both have seen my notes here, and I have some things that I've thought about and take notes about and cross out once we talk about them, whatever. Apparently, there's a fellow right now, I don't know what his motivation is, there's a fellow this year who is trying to use AI to publish 10,000 books this year using AI, which working 8 hours a day, 365 mm-hmm. days a year, he'd actually have to complete one, just about, not quite four books every hour. I did my mathy thing.
My gosh.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, so you're talking cover, and maybe he's just writing a five-word blurb for what, you know, Amazon or wherever he's publishing it, mm-hmm. you know, baseball murder mystery story, mm-hmm. right? It was about five words.
You get several dice and like with prompts. Yeah, right. And just toss well, and, like, all right.
And even then, though, I mean, if you're going, this was also fascinating to me because I was looking at it and thinking, I'm a pretty creative guy, and sometimes I really start to, you know, go down the rail or off the rail with some of my creative ideas when mm-hmm. I really get something. So I'd be curious to challenge myself, pick a number, 1,000, 10,000, whatever, to see how long it takes me to come up with that many prompts to feed AI, mm-hmm. right? Because even that's going to take some time on the human, the analog, you know, carbon-based unit, right? It's going to take a certain amount of time just to activate the machine with these ideas.
Unless you ask the machine, what are some ideas for books? Mm-hmm.
Can you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear. Okay. So even still, though, I mean, if you look at it and say in under 20 minutes, because it was like 3-point-something books that he'd have to complete mm-hmm. every hour, 8 hours a day. Right. So somewhere in there, you've got to get the artwork. You've got to have a title. I mean, it doesn't have to be good. Right. I mean, but you have to upload it. And even those three things, if you think prompt, title, you know, maybe the title is just about the prompt, right? Mm-hmm. But the artwork and uploading it, I mean, at least for me, when I've uploaded stuff to Amazon, Lulu, whatever, it's taken at least 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I don't want to do that 8 hours a day.
No, that sounds mind-numbing, actually.
Right. So as well, it's like, okay, what is this guy's motivation at 10,000 books? Well, money, yeah, but I'm assuming to some degree, whether he means it or not, he's using the shotgun method to flood the market. And that's where some other people are turning around and going, you're flooding the market. My mm-hmm. stuff isn't going to be seen when maybe, you know, I see some authors that will, they've got their thing down and they can write like four books a year, right? I'm writing about one book a year kind of right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we assume four is good, but this guy's doing four an hour?
Mm-hmm.
And are they like two-page chapbooks or, you know, what? Right. Yeah. But again, what's his motivation? Is he doing it to make a point, or is he doing it, as you were gesturing, is he doing it for money? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw an article, a guy who had, in the last 2 months, has made $2,000, so $1,000 a month, with AI books that he is self-published, quote unquote, and I think it was through Amazon. So he would go to ChatGPT or whichever. It would put in the prompt. It would write the story. He would upload it onto Amazon to sell, and he's made $2,000 already.
Hmm.
So I mean, it's a thing.
And one that I learned about only lately was low and medium content publishing, right? Making notebooks or date planners.
Sure.
Right. I have a friend in Montana who turned me on to this, and she said she was spending about 10 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she could go from concept to art upload in about 30 minutes. So she was turning out 2 to 4 of these with each 2-hour mm-hmm. session. As I was studying it, the person with the highest grossing single notebook, which of course this is the golden ring. This is not the success everybody's
right.
going to have.
Right.
They were making, I think it was like $2,000 a month off of this one notebook.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a blank book, right? But even still, while that person is using, I'm not good at terms today, they're using stock photos.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, but they still have the idea of, you know, well, I want to find a horse in a meadow and its head is down eating grass, as opposed sure. to two horses that are running across the meadow. You know, that was still a human choice, and presumably it wasn't a reworked bomb robot with a camera running around in a mm-hmm. meadow clicking at random or whatever. There's still the human creative element there. It may, I mean, to me, I'd like to get into it because, yeah, it's about money. but I do also have all of my, there you go. I've got something like over 100 creative ideas. When Aaron turned me on to this, I went nuts. And some of the ideas I already had, I just recycled other ideas from other creative projects and said, I could do this. I could do this coffee cup as a notebook too. I could do this t-shirt as a notebook too. But I thought up that t-shirt. I thought up that coffee cup.
Right. So the intellectual property then belongs to you. No question there.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Right.
Well, one thing that OpenAI, the people who made ChatGPT, is working on is a watermark. So, like, you'll be able to tell that it's AI generated. So, hopefully, because, yeah, that flooding is going to be. I've heard of some other contests, too, that were just completely shut it down. Because, yeah, just being flooded and drowned out in that, that really sucks. So, hopefully, we'll get some. They've already got, like, for, like, students plagiarizing and using it in schools, they have, like, AI detection of, like, was this written with AI? Because.
Or are you just a really bad writer? Software caught you.
Or are you a middle school student?
This isn't MLA.
No, the thing is, it would be perfect MLA. It would be perfect MLA.
Right.
It would be like grammatically correct. Like you can be like.
I need this.
Like Shakespeare, right? It's like it's very smooth. One of the things that they use actually is how often does the person change what they're talking about? Because AI, it'll just be like so smooth. Like a human like swaps and is like, I think this, I think this, I think this.
Yeah.
And it's just so many like changes and ideas. So there is software that detects whether things are made with AI, but it's not like yes or no. It's like we think this is probably 70%
a certain
AI.
Percentage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And see, I caught one article here just recently. Whatever, doesn't matter when. It said that somebody used the software to examine all of the episodes of Seinfeld, and said create a script.
Yeah.
Oh.
And apparently it burped out this Seinfeld episode in text, and other people reading it said, sounds like a whole, you know, is this the 20-year reunion episode, you know, the whatever, is this the reunion episode that they're going to make? Because I didn't see this, but they said it reads, humans were looking at it and saying it reads like a Seinfeld episode. Okay. You know, that's kind of neat if you want the expanded, but, you know, still... You know, at this point, it sounds like the companies that are taking our self-published books, like, okay, if that's your thing, cool, it's yours, right? Is there going to be a, call it human protest with these companies saying, I wrote my book, this person didn't exactly write their book, you know, one of the things that would be satisfactory is if, let's use the big name, Amazon, is if they had a thing that Sarah's book was written by Sarah. Lauren's book was written in part by, you know, it has to own that it was written in part by AI. It's somewhat AI generated, so you know what you're getting. Which, you know, is that any different than, say, the rating on a movie?
Right.
You know, has violence and squishy animals, you know, rated R, whatever. You know, at what point does that maybe become a middle ground? I don't know.
Lots of questions.
Lots of questions.
I mean, there's no like, obviously, especially at this point, there's no definitive answers for any of that.
Right. And it's interesting to hear too that, again, I'm probably thinking of a little bit more sci-fi, and I'm sure I'm not the only person to think this, which is, you know, yes, it's an emerging technology, but at this point, it's only as, so to speak, it's only as good as we are. It's only as smart as we are. It's not able to think beyond that, which then goes into a whole different rabbit hole where, you know, it's becoming self-aware.
Yeah.
It's making T-800s. We're all going to die.
We're all going to die.
We're all going to die by robots. Yeah. At what point did RoboCop get infected and you became a T-800, right? I think things like that because it got infected by the Matrix.
Ooh.
Right.
Ooh. Ooh.
See, I don't need Bob Ross episodes with SD. Right? I think of that stuff
I
just fine on
it
my
by
own.
Myself.
Right. Yeah, well, clearly it's an emerging thing, and at some point, to some degree, I think that's going to change too, or at least it could. Out of this as it develops, so
I think it'll change out of necessity. You know,
there's necessity, but then there's also human tweaking.
I mean, so both,
right?
It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Right. Well, let's wrap up that topic. But since it has been a few episodes since back with Tom and myself, since we got to meet with each of you, what's going on? What's going on with your writing? What's going on within the community for yourselves?
Well, I'm hoping to start my third Shadows of Magic book this summer. So I haven't ever finished a series. I've started four series and the first book in a series four times, and I haven't ever finished a series. So it feels like a mountain to climb. So I'm going to hopefully write the third book in the series this summer, and then just keep playing around with the physics worksheets and the games and the choose your own adventure stories and kind of math and physics and book story related things, because I just like making those. But yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and
I
remember you talking about your creative process, that you work pretty quick. That still blows me away, because for Daniel, for both of you, you know, I re-listened to those episodes. Like, well, yeah, these were people that I remembered meeting with them before, and you know, but let's recheck that episode. Let's get re-familiar. That was really fun. It's one of the rare times I've actually listened to any of the past episodes. I don't listen to them like other things, because if I was there, I'm good.
Yeah.
Right. Some people do, some people don't. But yeah, I remember you talking about your creative process, how quick you work, and then also what you do with your covers, which I'm still totally, I need to learn from you. Not just be envious, but learn from you. but, you know, knowing too about the following you have. So, you know, to hear that you're going for it, fantastic. Go for it.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be interesting.
I'm excited and scared, but yeah, thank you.
Well, and unless we like try and do other interim episodes, which I'd be fine with if we do throughout the summer. But at least at this point, if that doesn't happen, it'll be curious once, you know, August, September, October.
Oh, wow, this is really public accountability for me. Oh,
I know.
Oh, geez.
It is and it isn't. I mean, if you do it and you're good with it, cool. If you don't do it and you're good with it, it's your creation. Right. I mean, the books that I've been working on, I guess I'll jump in here. Sorry, Lauren. Some of the books I've been working on, heck, the Christmas cookie book that turned into a Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's cookie recipe book, because my ideas never stay in scope. I pull them back and get them somewhat back into scope, but it's never the original thing. And that's cool. That one, I thought I was going to have that published like 2-3 years ago, but life happens, you know, gosh, the list could be a whole nother podcast and nobody wants to hear that. But you know, how important is it that I get this product out? How important is it that other people have Christmas cookies in July or whatever, you know? Yeah, it can wait. I'm fine with that, you know? So just the same, I mean, it's all what's right for you, I think, when it comes to those deadlines. So, you know, accountability, sure, I don't know.
George R. R. Martin still hasn't finished Game of Thrones, so you're fine. We're still waiting on that. Patrick Roth is too.
There you
so
go.
You're good.
Right, good point.
But
long tradition, thank you.
Yeah, and I mean, with my life happens thing, I mean, even like this with the podcast where I kind of have to take a bit of a hiatus is, I just don't have time right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not, oh dear God, I'm not meeting that standard that other authors say, which is if you don't remember the last time you wrote, you're not an author. I don't remember the last time I wrote, and I'm fine with that, because right now that's not where things are at.
Right.
And this happens every year. This is a busy season plus a busy season between what I've got going on in the Scottish community and what I've got going on with my scuba diving work. Yeah, maybe I'll click a couple of words, you know, don't have time, you know, but I am working on, that cookie recipe book, working on a Scottish-Irish recipe book, which will also have food trivia, because I geek out on that apparently too.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then all of my recipes of the month that I've been doing for, I guess, since 2000. I'm working on publishing those as books that are 2 years in one book. So I'll have 2000, excuse me, 2000. Did I say 2000?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. 2020? let's move that up a little bit.
The 80s were only 20 years ago.
Yeah, I, would yeah. Just, I was not at my best mathiness right there.
Time is a totally different.
Yeah, I'm traveling through
time
that.
Time is a social concept.
Oh, gosh.
What is time, really?
Yeah, right. So anyway, my 2020 and 2021 recipes, I'm working for that to be in its own book. And then 2022, 2023 would be in its own book. So I've got to finish that one this year if that's going to happen. And then I get back to work on all of my back burner books that I'm also really excited about. So my writing is schizophrenic because I want to do it all. And I'm not going to use AI, but I am willing to clone myself to finish more of these. That's a topic
that's
for...
That is a totally different...
That's a whole different podcast episode. So join us in July with Dolly will be our guest. Yeah. But, you know, actually, one other that I'll throw in there is I spoke with Victoria Ventrachet, who met with Tom and I a year ago, I think it was, and talked with us about her historical fiction. And I mentioned to her, again, I'm not going to rattle this off. I'm going to behave myself so I don't have to edit this. I have done some historic research on a certain, we'll just say a certain musician around World War II. And I did a lot of research, found... basically, I can write my own history book, and I was told history doesn't sell. I was told, in fact, again, by Meg here at Kingfisher in Coopville, I was told by her that what sells is historical fiction. Mm-hmm. If you want people to read about this individual, write it as historical fiction. And I went, oh, well, if I already have to do all this history research, I can write the history book because I'll pretty well be doing that anyway for my own writing of the historical fiction. And then... if I really go nuts, maybe I could write a screenplay too, because if I get a bunch of fans off the historical fiction, then it's more likely to sell the screenplay, and that's where I go out of scope, right? But, and it is about...
Sure.
Victoria Ventrachet turned around and said, you know, if you want some help with that, you know, talk to me. So at some point, I'm going to get to meet with her, hopefully, knock, 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 right, and learn a bit more about writing historical fiction.
That'd
which,
be really cool.
Yeah, that's, I haven't written historical fiction recipes yet, so I have no experience there. But
be interesting genre.
Hey, I think it's wide open, right? So, I know multi-genre authors. I mean, I'm the guy that puts bagpipe sheet music with the bagpipe tune history with the cooking recipe and the food trivia all into one book. And I think it ends up meaning I either have a very broad potential audience or a very select one.
Very select, yes.
And they haven't revealed themselves to me yet. So we'll find out. So, Lauren, you said that you have found a writing group,
yes.
Which was one of the things that Tom and I spoke with you about.
Yes, it was very exciting because it was through this that I found the writing group. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So one of the people who had listened to this.
Okay.
He emailed me.
One of our two listeners?
Yeah. He emailed me and he was like, hey, I'm part of a writing group and we'd love to have you join us and everything. And so I ended up joining him right after the new year. And I've been with him ever since. They meet on Thursdays, every Thursday. And my boss he's an incredible person. And so he lets me actually get off a little bit early every Thursday.
Oh,
so
wow.
I can go to this.
Okay.
And it's so cool and it's so much fun. And like the people there all write a little bit different types of genre. Primarily it's fiction for the most part. But there are some who write kind of like more like biography or personal essays, memoir type idea. But so you have fantasy and then you have like fiction and that for in general.
Sure.
And we'll just submit our piece for the week, whatever we're doing. Most are writing a longer story. And so it's usually either like a chapter or a scene or something like that. And we'll take it, we'll go over it a few times, make our little remarks, and then meet together and discuss. And we always do two pieces every week.
Okay.
So two different people will get feedback every week and it's just so much fun and it's so cool.
Good.
And some people are really strict on grammar and others are more like, hey, this is the vibe that I get with it. So you get all types of feedback, like across the board. So I'm absolutely loving it.
Good.
So yeah.
Good. Yada.
Yeah. And yeah, so I've also finally started working on like a novel. So I got out of the short story stuff. I know, I'm so excited. So I finished my short story stuff.
Still, I love what you said when we met at the Commons.
Yeah.
Where you said you're writing all these short stories more or less to work out your characters and your stories mm-hmm. and all that. I mean, originally it was kind of like, yeah, come on, buck up, just write the damn story, right? But yeah. Then when you turned around and said, no, this has a really good mechanical
yeah.
thing for me. And like, oh, I don't know everything. Shut up, Doc. I mean, I thought it was great.
Yeah,
I thought it was great.
It's really cool. I'm really glad that I took the time to do that, you know? So I've moved out of that. Now I'm into the novel and I'm probably a little less than halfway through it. So yeah, according
Fantastic.
To my outline. So I don't know.
Okay.
About
that you wrote
count.
Yourself.
I wrote my outline all
as
my
a
life.
Human.
As a human.
wow.
But yeah, yeah. So I'm pretty excited about it. Now
okay.
I may end up extending it because I tend to do that. I'll get into something. I'm like, ooh, but what if I do this too? And then it grows. So but according
you're
to my outline.
Feral.
Yeah. But I do have my outline, and so I try to stick with it best that I can.
Fair enough. So see, that's also a kick. I mean, hey, you know, let's talk after the show, email, whatever. I mean, if we just still kind of do one a month, whatever. But if that's not the case and it is that we're working on bumping up the, you know, back end of the show here over the next couple of months, and then we get together in the fall, essentially, that will be something to check back in on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, cause I, you know, hey, I've got my own laissez-faire accountability cause I'd like to publish two of these books in September. I'd like to.
you can do it.
I'm thinking about it. Well, you know, after this month, I think the dive work becomes a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
You know, yeah, if I can crank those out. And most, I mean, like the 2020, 2021 book is, the guts are done. I just need a cover and, you know, write the back of the page. And, you know, some of that stuff is done. Some of it just needs a little bit more work, almost mm-hmm. to where, hey, I'm baking this week and getting these cookies done and writing it. I, you know, some of them I could get done pretty
yeah.
quick and then use AI to make the cover. anyway, no, it just, that also sounds like potentially we can go with that window too and see, you know, what's going on. So, that's neat.
Yeah, yeah.
So, this has been, my notes are weird. I'm not even going to use those notes right now. I'll figure out what I wrote later, or the AI wrote. Anyway. So Sarah Lauren, welcome to Wowie from the other side of the microphone, so to speak. And this, to me, has been just an absolute kick. And, you know, looking forward to going forward and talking again here, be it next month, be it come fall, see where Wowie goes. I'm glad that this is continuing. And, you know, like I said, I was really thrilled when each of you and Daniel turned around and said, yeah, I'll support this. Let's do this. I'd love to help. Cause that to me is really exciting for what can go forward with Wowie and what I think this already has developed into for Whidbey Island and somewhere emerging within the greater writing community.
Yeah, I was really glad you reached out. Thank you. And
cool.
Happy to be a part of it. And this was really fun. And just such a lovely like community, I feel like, that you guys have made with this podcast. It was really, really cool to go back and listen to the other episodes and kind of get to know like the bookstore owner.
Right.
And yeah, it was just like lovely to have a way of getting to know the people in the community here and the writing community here.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm excited.
Good. Great. Well, we will figure out where the next episode happens. And, you know, as I've said before, keep an eye to writingonwhidbeyisland.com. Keep an ear to these podcasts. Keep on watching out for what hopefully will be the growth. So anyway, thank you for joining us, Wowie listeners, and we will talk with you again. Do take care.